Earth by what we now call cesarean section, the procedure of surgically removing a newborn infant from its mother's womb. Tradition has it that Emperor Caesar was born this way, though no historian will stake his reputation on it. But in fact, the first recorded cesarean section, by which both mother and baby survived, was performed in Switzerland in 1500 by a man named Jacob. According to ancient Greek mythology, the god of sleep, Asclepius, was cut from the body of his dying mother by the sun god Apollo, and this was the legendary precedent for cesarean section, later to be repeated in fable and ultimately in reality. Until 1500, however, cesarean section was at best a half-successful operation, for even when the child was saved, the mother, in order to qualify for surgery, was usually already dead. Now, 1500 A.D., and remember, this is only 8 years after they were still talking about the world being flat. A modern surgical procedure was about to be demonstrated. The subject's name was Frau Neufer, N-U-F-E-R, an attractive young Swiss woman, apparently healthy in every way, and pregnant. There was no indication that her labor was to be a difficult one, but it was. With the child overdue, Mrs. Neufer was bedridden in agony for days. Her midwives panicked, summoned surgeons, but in keeping with the medical practices of the dawning 16th century, Mrs. Neufer's physicians refused to perform the operation which might save her life, because she was not yet dead. It was better this way, they said, for at least her unborn child would have a chance. Well, there was one in their midst. There was one who disagreed. His name was Jacob. Mrs. Neufer did not have to die, he told the other. She was young and strong. A cesarean might be performed before a crisis had been reached to save both the mother and the baby. Incensed by this suggestion, not wishing to be considered accomplices in the murder of Mrs. Neufer, the conformist physicians left the room, and they left Jacob alone with the frightened midwives and the delirious mother. It was the longest long shot in the world, never before attempted, but Jacob was going to try. With a confident ease, masking his own apprehension, he removed his instruments from his bag. If he succeeded, he would be a hero. If he failed, he would be an assassin. But within an hour, Jacob emerged from Mrs. Neufer's room, a hero. His patient was alive and safe and resting comfortably, as was her newborn child. The surgical success achieved by Jacob in 1500 would not be repeated with frequency and safety until the development of modern anesthetics and antiseptics. So you might say Mrs. Neufer was lucky. She lived to bear other children without complication. She died at the age of 77. But beyond the skill of Jacob and the luck of his patient, there was another factor, another something special, which doubtless influenced the outcome of this remarkable operation. The first documented successful cesarean. And that something was love. For you see, Jacob was not a doctor at all. I said Jacob was not a doctor. He was the woman's husband. He was the child's father, Jacob Neufer. His surgical instruments, equipment for gelding sows. His profession, hog butcher. But with what talents and tools he had, he did what he had to do. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. EWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guests are my friends and members of the PWM multi-generational panel, Jake Frederick, Kaylin Clark, and Jay Leach. And just as a quick reminder, but gentlemen, welcome back to PWM.
Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You got to get on that microphone over there. It's a reminder to the audience, the multi-generational panel, as I refer to it, is really the multi-generational grape and grain society. We meet monthly to have lunch, and we have folks of various different generational cohorts, and we all opine on current events and give our opinions and throw back a few at the same time. So it's great to have you guys in studio. This is kind of a really target-rich environment. Jay, why don't you start? Why don't you just do a real quick reintroduction?
Myself?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm Jay Leach. I'm a local to Atascadero, California. I'm a third-generation Atascadarian. I think we all met, except for Kaylin and I, who grew up together. We all met through BNI, our Business Networking International Group. We all come out and meet and represent our individual fields. And, it's been great getting to know Barry and Jake over the last few years. And the MGGS lunch is always a great time.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kaylin Clark. I'm 27 years old, local to Atascadero. Been here for quite some time now. I'm a computer technologies professional. I manage a company called Hammers IT that provides IT support for a variety of different businesses, both small and large. And yeah, it's just been an absolute pleasure to get to know everybody and talk on these topics.
All right, Jake.
In the middle of the road, I'm Jake Frederick. I'm with a consulting firm down in San Luis Obispo. It's called BBSI. We're a resource to small business, medium-sized business, just offering outsourced solutions. And what a fun group.
Yeah, it is. And so folks, we have two young millennials, both in their late 20s, Kaylin and Jay. We got a mid-wave Gen Xer in Jake, and you got the old guy here. So at the helm. So one of the topics, not really, actually, I'm not in control at all. One of the topics that we discussed at our monthly lunch last week was the Daniel Penny acquittal, the murder of the United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. And how it seems like the whole definition of victimhood in the United States has been turned on its head. On the one hand, obviously, you know, you had Daniel Penny, who was protecting himself and others on the subway, who legitimately, unfortunately, but legitimately, you know, the guy died. And then you have this Luigi, whatever his name was, Luigi Mangione, who in cold blood, you know, murdered a CEO of United Healthcare, the CEO of United Healthcare. And I guess what's really curious to me, and this is where we'll jump off on this topic. On the one hand, it's obvious to me, you know, what's going on here. But then you have people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, both senators, basically saying that, well, you know, Mangione was justified, basically, is what they've said. So, I mean, let's start with you, Jay. What are your thoughts on, you know, this whole redefinition of victimhood, and how do you see it?
Yeah, I think victimhood as a whole in our country, I think that a lot of people just like to be the victim. I mean, there is a huge lack of self-accountability and self-responsibility for, you know, taking responsibility for your own actions. And I feel like my generation is pretty bad about that with social media. It's really easy to hop online and complain about something and get comments and likes and responses from other people who you feel like are your peers. And that just never leads anywhere. If you're continuously complaining about something and not actually taking action and taking responsibility to solve it, then you could just complain all day and nothing really ever changes. So I think victimhood is really a big problem in our country overall.
Yeah. What do you say, Kaylin?
I was actually raised by my grandparents, so from a young age, that type of mentality was just not a part of my childhood, and so I don't really understand why so many people find the gratification of being a victim in so many different ways, and I think that this assassination kind of shows that if you try to be a victim, or you paint yourself as the victim, it doesn't really... It only makes sense to other people who are also doing that. So there's a lot of other people out there, like ourselves, that don't really understand it.
Yeah. In this article that I sent around from Real Clear Politics by a guy named Peter Zane, who's one of their editors, he wrote a very interesting article, but he made some contentions, and I want to run through these just to get your take on it. He says that we live in an age of grievance. Do you think we live in an age of grievance, Jake?
That's a tough one. You know, these two stories are, you know, one's intentional, one's unintentional from the two individuals. And, you know, a lot of political thoughts on the two sides of the coin on how it was dealt with. And both do feel, there's a victimization that can be seen from both sides, I think, from it. The family of the CEO, there's some victim in there. The killer who decided to take a life and his decisions, what was he a victim of? I think when you politicize it, it can skew it at the end of the day. But I think mental health and just how people's perception of our world based on how they're gathering information has such an impact on everyone's viewpoint. And the grievance portion, I don't know. We're in an election year, so I think there's just a lot of polarization that happens.
When you look at people younger than you, not these guys, of course, because these guys are really hard working, but do you think that there's a certain level of entitlement from the younger generation?
Everything's so easy. If you think you had to go to a library, you had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get your references for your, and then,
we did that in Los Angeles, right?
I didn't do that.
No.
But I had a library two blocks away and I used it quite often. Mm-hmm. I just think the accessibility and there's that on-demand nature to how kids are able to perceive and gather information and learn, I think it changes people a little bit when everything is so easy. So in that light, I guess I'm a little older, so I'm saying they got it easy. It's the best thing I can say. But, the entitlement is I want it now, right? So then you think about, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when that girl's like, I want it now. Well, that's a perception that I can definitely see. When kids want something right away, I try to give my kids the grace to say what they want and create patience in what they do, because that's when the work comes in and that's when they learn and grow as individuals, when they learn patience.
Yeah. Jay and Kaylin, we've talked about the whole role of mental illness in young people. Mm-hmm. And, we just had this young girl, 15-year-old girl in Madison, Wisconsin, shoot up her school. And clearly, I only play a psychiatrist, on the radio, but, when you look at this Mangione guy, you look at, there's got to be some level of mental illness involved in my mind when you see something like this happen. What do you think, Kay?
I completely agree. If you look at the assassin's background, he came from a prominent family, came from money, came from Ivy League schools. It doesn't really make sense that he'd throw his life away. So things don't really add up there. I agree with you.
Yeah. Jay?
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing about mental health is people would like to believe that, it only happens to certain individuals and we're not all susceptible to it. The reality is, anybody, even one of us in the room, could end up with mental health issues later on in life or at any point in life. It's not something that you can really anticipate, or you can look at somebody's background and upbringing and be like, oh, they should be okay. It can happen to anybody, and a lot of different things can trigger it, whether it's a high stress situation like he was facing or anything at all. Even I'm sure that 15-year-old girl, something just snapped for her, where she felt like that's what she was going to do that day. It's sad and it's unfortunate, but mental health is a real problem in our nation.
Right. Here's one more, and then we'll from this article that I think is so important, and I definitely want to hear what each of you think. He says, we live in an age of self-aggrandizement. It's difficult for today's entitled grievance collectors to deal with the setbacks because our culture has in many ways elevated each person into a kind of god. Okay. So basically, he says, our political divisions are so angry because they are fueled by the belief that each of us possesses the truth, that the world should be ordered by our beliefs. So now I'm not a practice. I believe in God. I'm not a practice. The rabbi was on me last week when he was here, because I'm not really a practicing Jew. On the other hand, I have a deep held belief that there's something bigger than me, beyond me, that I think most people, many people younger than me, don't believe anymore. It's that self-aggrandizement. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I'm definitely Christian. Go to a church on Sundays, raise my kids to understand who God is and to perceive it in a way that they can understand. I think the opportunity to know your creator is super important. And for everybody, that's a little bit different. And I also think it's important to have some foundation on who you are as a person, and have some identity around that. And I believe that having faith in a creator and identity in a creator helps you know how you should act and how you should present yourself to the world.
Either of you guys want to tackle this one?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think with what both of you said, very as far as our generation not having a strong belief, or a lot of people just not believing in God in general. But like Jake said, it gives you kind of a good foundation to build off of. I think that my view on Christianity, or just religion as in general, is a lot different than most, where I view it as more of a technology that, you know, is really crucial for man. If you look throughout history, having that foundation of just operating principles of, you know, be kind to your neighbor, and these commandments that really give you a base to operate off of. And I think that that is what our generation is missing, is just some sort of understanding outside of your personal feelings. When you believe in God or you believe in something bigger than yourself, whatever that may be, it gives you a different perspective, almost a third person perspective, where you can step back and really analyze a situation better, in my opinion, and not take it so personally, and just understand that you're in the world and experiencing it, and you will have influence on it, but the world does not revolve around you.
Yeah. You want to take anything on there, Kaylin?
Yeah. Growing up, I was really involved in the church, and it did a lot for setting my moral compass. And, you know, I had a great community from it. So it's a big reason why I am who I am today. My opinion, views have changed since then. Since I was a kid, I've had a lot going on in life that has changed those views. But I do think that it's easy without anything there as a child to just sort of look inward, and it sort of does create that God complex with younger generations. And when you mix that with social media, I mean, it's just sort of off the chain a little bit.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, speaking of godlike, let's talk about another theme that seems to be running through the culture right now, and that is the notion that we're all living in an alternate universe. Mark Andreessen did a Joe Rogan podcast, which I actually, one of the few I've really listened to for 3 hours, you know, while I was working around the ranch last weekend, because they are long. And I'm sure our listeners are pleased that I'm not on for 3 hours. But I mean, I don't know, what do you guys think of it, you know, about this whole alternate reality, the multiverse? I mean, are we living in an alternate, are we all living in multiple realities? Jake is laughing his butt off here. Go ahead, Jake.
I think it's great. I mean, we all got to get through the day. And I think at the end of the day, it's wonderful to think about your reality and your perception. I think of, what's that movie with Tim? What was it? It was where he was basically being observed his entire life.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Basically that, you know, I have those moments where I'm like, is this all just like pre-organized, and is everything kind of orchestrating? Sometimes things just work in life, and you know that aligns. Sometimes they go horrifically wrong, and you're like, that had to have been orchestrated. So I think we internalize a lot of that. And you know, the movie you're referencing is great. And it's just fun.
Well, you know, you must feel like you're in an alternate reality with those four little kids running around.
Yeah.
You know,
they definitely alter my reality.
Well, I watched a movie this weekend. I guess it was done about a few years back with she's a very prominent, I think, Chinese actress. And, you know, I should have written down the name of it. And I mean, it was really a mind-boggling movie, but the way they did it, you know, she was constantly flipping from, you know, timeline to timeline.
Yeah.
It was almost like an old Star Trek, but on steroids. What are you know, you're our tech guy. What do you think? You're living in an alternate reality there, Kaylin?
I would agree. I think it's fun to play with the notion, but, you know, as people in society, we get used to patterns, and these patterns happen every single day, every week, month to month. You know, we always talk about how fast the day goes, how fast the week goes. I'm like, you know, it's already December. Isn't that crazy? So when something really gnarly happens and it seems like everything doesn't really make sense, when all of a sudden our daily schedules and routines are thrown off, and it's easy to, you know, because technology is patterns and numbers and binary and all that. So I think it's easy to say that we're in alternate realities because of these patterns. But I mean, I think it's just as difficult to explain as some of the deeper depths of like astronomy and whatnot. We don't really know. We're just sort of saying theories.
So Jay, I mean, you're dealing with people who are moving. That talk about an alternate reality. I mean, and you're dealing with hundreds of people every year who are moving. So how do you cope with other people's alternate realities?
Oh, I rather enjoy it. I'm pretty grounded in my beliefs and what I think is true, but I'm definitely something that will entertain somebody else's idea and enjoy hearing their perspective more than anything. Because I know it's not going to change my opinion. I might take in some of what they have to say, but for the most part, I just, whether you're, you know, think you're the star of the show or you think you're just, you know, an extra player in, or an extra role in the casting call, whatever you think, I'm there to really just observe and enjoy. So yeah,
you're the ringmaster.
I'm the star in my movie.
Well, I know we're going to have to take this next question on the other side of the break, but let me get the question out so you can think about it. And the good news is we have so much things to talk about that we'll never get through in the rest of the show. But this is a great, this is an important one. And I really, what I want to know is how much you pay attention to what's going on in the foreign world, you know, foreign affairs and that kind of stuff, and the, you know, political thing. Because I'm, yeah, as you can tell, as you all know, I'm a political junkie. It seems to me that the re-election of Donald Trump is just another step in the realignment of political and cultural forces around the world. Last year, Javier Milei became Argentina's president on a platform of cutting government and inflation. So far, he's been largely successful. Then in Europe and Canada, left-of-center governments are crumbling, and the Middle East is being totally reshaped. Also, I want to mention that Italy has a conservative prime minister now who's just kicking butt and taking names there. Italy is coming on strong. So when we return, folks, we're going to talk about what these guys think about what's going on in the world around us and in our own country. So please stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Investigators giving an update following yesterday's gunfire at a Wisconsin school that left three dead, including the 15-year-old female shooter. Madison Police Chief Sean Barnes cautions about an alleged manifesto being circulated online.
We know a document has been widely shared on social media. At this time, we cannot verify its authenticity.
Police say a motive has not been determined. RFK Jr. back on Capitol Hill today, meeting with senators as he tries to win support ahead of a Senate confirmation hearing. He's President-elect Trump's nominee for Health and Human Services Secretary.
He is getting a pretty warm welcome from the conservative Republicans that he's been meeting with. He meets with GOP leader John Thune. And Thune was vowing on the Senate floor this morning that he is going to do whatever it takes to get Trump's nominees confirmed.
Fox's Aisha Hosni, America's listening to Fox News.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online deltaliquidenergy.com.
Okay, welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jay, Jake, and Kalen, our multi-generational panel. And we're talking about, I guess, you know, world affairs and national affairs and the whole political and cultural realignment. So you want me to repeat that question, guys, or do you want to take it from my question? What do you see? I mean, let me ask you this. Here's the way I want. How much do you really pay attention to foreign affairs, the big political political stuff, and how things are shifting?
Well, I know from all the elections, a lot of incumbent changes. You know, post-COVID environment, all that stuff really had some impact on how people perceived their wellness, how they perceived how their government treated their people. And I think that was an international thing. And it resonated throughout all the elections that went through. As far as, you know, it's really hard on a daily basis to take on, you know, the problems of our international world. But I also know we're an international we're a country that is dependent upon an international world to live and thrive. So I think it's important to stay on it. I don't think I'm up on it as much as I should be. And I know how much of an impact it has in the future, particularly when it comes to technology and, you know, that. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, in many regards, I mean, we talk about, you know, we've always talked about we're in the fourth turning. You know, the loss of confidence in our institutions, which is where we're at today, and the drone story, which we'll pick up next, is a perfect example of why we don't trust our institutions. But when you look at the big picture international stuff today, I mean, the French government is falling. Trudeau up in Canada is reported, all these left of center guys, he's probably going to resign because he's lost the confidence of his people, as well he should. The German government is on the way out, and that's going to be reconstituted in a big way. And then, you know, you've got all the stuff that's going on in the Middle East. I mean, and so, I mean, we're really in a pretty perilous time. Kaylin, how do you perceive all this, and how does it impact you, I guess?
I've mostly been seeing things about Canada,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like the prime minister is getting flamed pretty hard.
Our 51st state.
Yeah, yeah, rightfully so. I mean, I heard that just on a 6-day air travel, the food on the plane was over $200,000.
Really?
Just within 6 days, that's what he spent. And so I think that, you know, when you see what they did with the drug policy in Canada and how it sort of backfired pretty heavily, I think a lot of the people are just fed up with it. They're fed up of being lied to. They're fed up of the politicians just somehow making millions of dollars and spending millions of dollars while they're all dealing with the choices these politicians are making. So I think it's refreshing to see a lot of the governments around the world really trying to make change and do change quickly, and not like the normal gears of government, which are, you know, usually rusted and slow.
I want to hear what you have to say, Jay, but, you know, one of the governments I think we really need to keep an eye on overseas is what's going on in Great Britain. This is going to be very interesting because they went totally leftist in their last election with this new Labour government, and the restrictions on free speech, which we're going to hopefully get to, and the surveillance state. I mean, in many regards, Britain has become like a mini China.
Right.
What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's concerning. I don't think that I stay on top of a lot of what goes on outside of the U.S. or really maybe even inside of the U.S. I feel like a lot of news is fear mongering. So I kind of say if you don't have enough money to or power to address these problems, then it's probably best for people to pay attention to what they have going on in their own lives and start small and work out from there. But to address the topics you're asking about, I honestly, I'm not well versed enough on these topics to really to give an opinion. I am interested to see how it plays out, and kind of like I was saying earlier, I'm really just feel like I'm watching the show, and if it all burns, you know, it'll be cool to be alive while that happens, and if it continues on a good path, then, you know, I guess I was more blessed to be alive while that's going on.
Yeah. So you're a kind of a, I would say, an uninterested observer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but here's a story that I know Mr. Cynical on the panel would love to talk about. And that, what do you think about, and again, this, again, right, the whole drone story, what do you make of that? Are you paying any attention to the drone story? You think it's silly?
I think...
You think there are little green men up there?
Probably. I mean, I don't know about with those drones, but I think that it's more likely that there is aliens than not, in my opinion. The idea that we're the only intelligent, if you want to call us intelligent, species walking around this universe, I don't think that really pans out. But as far as the drone, I think it is just kind of a silly news cycle. I think that news is silly overall. That's kind of what I was saying. That's why I am so disconnected from it. It's just something. It's what adults watch to feel like they're not on. They're not a kid and watching TikTok or Instagram. But there's no difference. It's just social media, and you guys spend a couple hours every morning getting your fix of it.
What about you, Caleb?
Yeah, just real quick. I think for people, you know, where it's actually happening, it's a little more than news to them. Mm. Obviously, for us, we just see some clips on the internet or we hear about it.
One advantage for Air Force Base.
Yeah, but you know, that's not something that we saw like in person. Yeah. We're not going outside of our front door and seeing all these drones flying around or at night or anything. So it's way different for us when we see the news here than the people, you know, where it's actually happening. It's a big deal to them. I'd be concerned if there were giant, you know, truck-sized drones flying around my house. It might be concerning, and I would be posting about it. So, yeah, it's different, you know, just different for us because we're over here.
I think that part of the problem, this is just to be what the story is that the whole reaction of the Biden administration is just so typical. Maybe they've learned nothing in 4 years. I mean, they let this Chinese spy balloon fly across the country, and that did real damage to our security with all the information that they gathered. And here it's to say, well, you know, we don't really have an immigration problem. You know, we the borders are closed. We have a secure border, you know, and now they can't even answer a question. And whether it's a lack of competence or they just want to lie to us for some nefarious reason.
Yeah.
It's not a good look. What do you think, Jake?
I think
are you in
talk about an alternate universe, right? Like I feel like there's these angles of approach to this information. I think technology is hard to put your hands around. So what other countries are able to do is very intimidating to me. Just because I'm not in the tech field, so I don't have a deeper understanding of where other countries are able to surveil. I know that there's a lot of surveillance going on in our own country, on us, us surveilling ourselves. So, and then there's technology, there's the apps and stuff that also track and surveil and, you know, manage what we do. So definitely I feel like I'm not educated enough to where I totally understand, but I think it's good to be suspicious. I think it's good to ask questions. I think there needs to be transparency, particularly around national security. And technology, I feel like those are two hot buttons for most people, no matter how old you are. So, I think I would wish our administration had done a better job of communicating that information from a security standpoint. And I think that kind of transparency helps us all, you know, understand and get on the same page.
Well, the surveillance thing, you know, I think this is a really important issue. And I'm going to jump around here because I think we were going to talk a little bit about cryptocurrency. And today, and one of the things that I picked up this weekend, I was listening to the Tucker Carlson podcast, and he interviewed a guy named Roger Ver, who was a very big innovator in cryptocurrency. You know, one of the early guys to get involved. He ended up having to move out of the country and renouncing his United States citizenship because he got into trouble with the federal government. Because he was promoting cryptocurrency, because ultimately the government doesn't want cryptocurrency, right, Jay?
Yeah.
Because the way they got the system set up now, they can surveil us more easily since they don't have control. I mean, isn't that one of the now of course, Ver is now back under arrest, and they want to put him in jail for 109 years for something else that he's done in regards to cryptocurrency. But I guess the question I have is what is the, because you're kind of our crypto guy, what is the privacy issues around cryptocurrency, and why don't central governments want people to use them?
The privacy issues around cryptocurrency is, it's all trackable. It's a digital ledger. while if you don't know how to use it, it may seem like computer code to you, but it's very easy to trace and track what you do with the currency or the cryptocurrency and where it goes, where it's come from. It's all on a website that anybody can look up. I mean, and it's governments would like you to believe that they don't want cryptocurrency, but right now, if you looked up who owns the most Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, who is basically the first person, like the godfather of...
He invented it.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So he owns 1.1 million Bitcoin. Then you have MicroStrategy, which is a publicly traded company. They own 439,000 Bitcoin. And then right under them is the U.S. government, who currently owns 213,000 coins. And right below the U.S. government is the Chinese government, who owns 194,000 Bitcoin. And then another publicly traded company, and then the Winklevoss twins. So governments may, again, communicate that they don't believe in cryptocurrency, but they're buying a lot of it for not wanting it to be a thing.
Are you
hedging their bets?
Are you into crypto, Jake?
Yeah, I've done a lot of research on crypto because it's fascinating to me because some people say it's a currency. Some people say it's an asset. Some people say it's a hedge against gold. Like there's a lot of people's opinions on it. I think it's extremely speculative. I think it's hard to take this ledger-based system and then say that it's a currency that is supposed to be counter to what the dollar is, because I think there's a lot of similarities to it. I mean, it's decentralized, but we don't know anything about the developer. So then somebody's housing the majority of this asset. So like, there's so much in the air about it all that I feel like it's so speculative that if you just pros and cons it, you just be like, I guess if you just wanted to take a little bit and just say, hey, maybe this will turn into a ton of money. But I think for me, there are tangible things in life that you can invest in that will have great returns. But if you believe that there's a new way where crossing borders, where you can take peer-to-peer payment systems, move them across that, you know, move out of this idea of, you know, a government-backed currency or gold-backed currency, I think there's a future to that for sure. But how that's realized, I feel like it's the wild, wild west right
now. So here's the question for the tech guy. Isn't the big aspect of crypto the whole blockchain thing? I mean, I still don't get the whole blockchain.
That is how it's created. And so the blockchain is a series of algorithms. And as you solve these algorithms, it creates a new block in the chain. And then that produces Bitcoin or other types of currencies. And one of the main purposes of cryptocurrency is you're supposed to own your currency, your crypto coins, right? So it's not a bank that owns it. It's not a government that owns it. It's you own it. And so that's one of the main appeals. And I think one of the things that the developers of cryptocurrency in the beginning were, you know, sought out to do. And I know that one of the articles we've been reading up on talks about a gentleman that is getting indicted on a bunch of...
Yeah, that's that Roger Ver.
Yeah, getting indicted on tax charges when, he just... It doesn't really make sense where those charges are coming from, and he's just trying to create a currency and have the people own the currency and not the governments. And I think that that's something that scares a lot of big governments, especially ours.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. We need to do a whole show on crypto. That would be interesting. We need to figure out how to do that. But I think it will be interesting since Trump is more behind crypto than the current administration. Mm-hmm. If Roger Ver gets off with a new Attorney General, they dismiss charges, and what happens? I mean, again, I don't know enough about it to know whether he did anything right or wrong. But
yeah, right.
But all only what I heard and what I read in the article. So
yeah, well, and then his podcast talks about gets a lot of his good opinion on it. Yeah. But yeah.
All right, so we got
a very early adopter.
Yeah, yeah, he was one of the first. Yeah, so we should talk about getting a real crypto maven on the show one of these days. Okay. Let's in the last 3 minutes we have, and then I want to talk about what your thoughts are about Elon Musk. He's certainly now he's definitely a cultural icon. The guy is everywhere and everything. He's got X, he's got AI. As I mentioned in the first segment, I mean, one of the most important things that he did in the election was make sure that we actually had access to the truth. in many regards. That, you know, he broke the mainstream media's back, basically. Jay, real quick, let's do a real quick round robin. What are your thoughts on Elon? How do you view him?
I view him as a genius, because that's how he should be looked at. The guy's clearly above the average IQ. I think that, yeah, it was really cool to see somebody advocate for free speech. I don't know if he is necessarily always offering the truth, but free speech is important, right? Because even when it's not the truth or it's not something you want to hear, it should be able to have a platform to be shared.
Right. Lack of censorship.
Exactly. Yeah. And I am in full support of that. Yeah. And I think that it's great that somebody that is probably going to be the first trillionaire to ever walk the face of the planet is in that, is also looking to advocate for just the everyday person to have access to free speech.
Yeah. What about you, Kalen?
Yeah, I like Elon. I think that, you know, if we would had grown up in the same town in the same time, we would have been friends, I think, because he's a smart, nerdy guy, likes computers. You know, one of his big companies was PayPal that made him a huge fortune. And then from there, he just started branching out and doing all these really cool ideas that only a super genius nerd would try to even attempt, like the Boring Company. I think that's, you know, an ingenious thing to do. And
yeah, I forgot about that one.
Just sounds like a nerd with a bunch of money wanted to do something cool with good intention. And the Doge program, I hope that he does well. I really do. I think he's got good intentions. And then obviously he naming it Doge is no mistake. So the Doge coin and then
the Doge coin.
Exactly. That was not an accident. So yeah.
What about you, Jake?
Yeah, he's a shrewd businessman. He's definitely a genius. I think he understands, you know, the value of his time. I know, being it that he's tied into government contracts and that, you know, a lot of his ecosystem is dependent upon the support of the government. I think he's, as a shrewd businessman, he's playing his time, you know, with the Trump audience to try to make sure he's still at the table. You know, Trump's a bit of a loose cannon at times. So, being so influential and having so much of your money tied up in government, I feel like he's playing his cards really well. And that's what a shrewd businessman does.
All the tech guys have come to the table now. It comes right down to it. You know?
Elon did, and then they did too.
So one of the things, and again, like, we got probably another minute here. So my knock on Elon, and again, it's not a knock on him. I mean, it's my knock on anybody who has a business that relies so heavily on government subsidies. Tesla, okay? But again, that happens as, you know, that our industrial, quote-unquote, you name an industrial complex, you know, where the government creates a program and then businesses, yeah, you know, rise up. But again, he took advantage of it, and you know, good on him. I guess, and I do like, and I want, this is what I want your opinion on, is, you know, he's big into AI, but he's also into AI with control of some sort, not just having it, you know, run wild. What are your thoughts on AI and keeping control on it, Jim?
Yeah, I think since he's so knowledgeable and so capable, I think you don't think of politicians as like, you know, these geniuses that totally understand the industry they're representing. So an individual like him, I think, has a bit of an advantage over the rest. And so whether he's a consultant or brought on, you know, he's the head of Doge or however that shakes out, I think having him on that side is going to be super helpful. Cryptocurrency is going through like a bull run, mm-hmm, just because they know he's in that role. But AI, again, not knowing enough about it, but I also know it's just going to have a huge impact on.
Kalen, do you have any thoughts on the AI stuff that's going on? Because you're our tech guy.
Yeah, I think that it's important to, I think Elon sees the point of protecting it in a way that it doesn't just exponentially grow out of control, because technology exponentially grows, and he knows how fast AI can do that.
All right. Well, guys, we got one more short segment, and in that short segment, we're going to talk about the manosphere, which is one of Jay's favorite topics. And then we'll if we have some time, we're going to talk about predictions for 2025. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks finishing lower despite upbeat retail sales data, and as the Fed kicks off its two-day policy meeting with a decision on interest rates coming on Wednesday afternoon. The Dow notching its first nine-day losing streak since 1978. Most of the 11 S&P 500 sectors were lower, with tech leading the charge while consumer discretionary gained. Shares of NVIDIA continue to fall deeper in correction territory, with its stock down 2%. The chipmaker is facing a setback as investors worry about how quickly the AI darling can ramp up sales of its Blackwell AI processors. The Dow winners, Apple, Microsoft, and Johnson & Johnson. The Dow decliners, United Health Group, Goldman Sachs, and Salesforce. The Dow lower by 268 points. The Nasdaq down 65. S&P 500 down 23. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Listen to the actual Yelp review by Paso Robles Glass from our happy customer. I had a tough time deciding whether it was worth the money to replace my single-pane aluminum windows with new efficient ones. Only so much money and multiple things that could be updated in my house. Brandon and Steven just left my house after spending 2 days putting in all the new Milgard Trinzic windows. Best money I have ever spent. I never imagined new windows could change the look of a house so much. The best part was all the time that Brandon and Steven took showing pride in their work, making sure I was taken care of as their customer. The customer service they provided made every dollar I spent worth it. I would recommend Paso Robles Glass and their staff to anyone looking to get glass work done. Too bad more companies don't operate and care about their customers like Paso Robles Glass does. A really refreshing experience. Signed by our customer, Eric R.
Paso Robles Glass, the Milgard replacement window masters. Call for your free in-home sales consultation for Milgard Trinzic windows and doors. 805-238-4014.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Kaylin Clark, Jake Frederick, and Jay Lynch of the Protecting What Matters multi-generational panel. You know what, folks? The next 2 weeks will be a bearless Tuesday for you. The show falls on Christmas and New Year's Eve, which means the station is closed. So I will be back on January 7th, and I've already conjured up that show. One of the topics is going to be, we're going to be talking about dancing horses, and these guys here know about the dancing horses. So it's another one of our friends who's what do you want to say?
Yeah, shout out to Nate Santos and his dancing horses.
We're gonna find out how horses are trained to dance and some other things that Nate's really on top of. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to 2025, guys. Let's talk real quickly. We've talked about this in our lunch. I think it's fascinating. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal right after the election that Barron Trump got his dad into the manosphere. So, Jay, why don't you tell everybody what the manosphere is?
Yeah.
Because you are the man.
I thought the article was really interesting. It's one of the reasons I thought that, in my opinion, Trump was going to win was purely just his campaign efforts were... It was night and day between him and Kamala. I thought he did a really good job of going on these long form podcasts like Joe Rogan. I think he went on the Nelk Boys and just all of these things where like my generation and the people kind of above a little bit older than myself. That is their news. I was saying earlier, like, I don't watch the news. I don't watch CNN or Fox News or MSNBC. I watch a lot of podcasts. And Joe Rogan has really pioneered and created so many opportunities for these other podcasters to have this long form platform. And Trump took advantage of that. I think it's something that the Democrats missed out on, because that's where you're going to get actually in touch with a lot of viewers directly. And they believe their hosts because they spend so much time listening to them.
What about you, Kay? Who do you follow in the manosphere? Other than me.
Yeah. I think Joe Rogan's a big one. And the reason why people in our generation like podcasts and just people in general is because podcasts are at minimum 60-minute to like 3-hour conversation, a raw, uncut conversation where people's opinions can really be fleshed out and people's thoughts can be fleshed out. It's not just, nothing's edited, right? So, and something with the internet is everything is so heavily edited and doctored that we don't know exactly what we're looking at. I don't think the news is any different. And it's with podcasts, you just get the raw information from both sides. It's really nice. I would think Joe Rogan's, I've watched hours and hours and hours of different podcasts with him. He has so many different guests that come on there, and it's been really educational for me in a lot of different ways.
I like Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Just because I like looking at her picture on the Jake, who do you follow in the manosphere?
Yeah, I wish I had the time to watch a 3-hour podcast or listen
well,
to
yeah,
one.
I
don't actually watch it.
Yeah. I think the time frames that I have to digest information, a lot of it is just a lot of articles. I do have podcasts that I listen to, but they're all like 15 minutes long. And then I do get snippets of stuff for Joe Rogan because I think he's hilarious. And I love that Trump convinced him to get on there. And I love that he ended it with, I haven't decided either way. Like, he left it so open for him. And so it speaks to him as a person, Joe Rogan as a person. So
yeah.
I do think that there's a lot of attention given to personalities. And Vaughn, what's his name?
Theo Vaughn.
Theo Vaughn, yeah. He's fun to listen to, and he's raw, and he's honest. And it reminds me of like a town hall, where everybody just comes, and you talk about what's going on, and it'd be good to have some more interaction, I think, besides just one guest, because that could add some more value. But it just feels a lot like that, where it's just an open conversation.
Well, and I think that the big story behind just the whole podcasting and the alternative media is, number one, I mean, if you look at the two strategies of the two campaigns, I mean, Trump went to the manosphere. Kamala went to the influencers.
Mm. Yeah. Celebrities.
Who are vapid. Where there's real substance. I mean, some of the guys that I listen to, I think I mentioned them, the Ruthless podcast. I mean, it's political, but they're really funny. Mm-hmm. But again, you get a lot of great information on it. So I got to go check out Theo Vaughn now. So anyway, I think this has been a game changer in this election. And I'm definitely glad to see that people are, one of the things, we have Dan Bongino on the radio here at KPRL in the morning, and he's been very instrumental in the whole Rumble thing and getting that stuff out. All right, real quickly before the show ends, when we're sitting here again next year, Jake, what are the one or two things that you're expecting to see at the end of 2025?
Yeah, definitely some new AI adoption in businesses. New AI adoption in regular everyday life. I couldn't even tell you what that is, but I do believe AI is on this like fast moving train.
Mm-hmm.
Social media probably still is going to be the primary source of ingested information for most of, younger generation. Looking forward to seeing what the next year is at the White House.
I think a lot of people around the world that aren't yet hyper-connected to the internet and all the different social medias will be. And so having most of our planet hyper-connected in a way that they can absorb information and get information within seconds and communicate is going to be interesting.
Jay.
Crypto summer.
All right. Listen, well, folks, it's been a great year. Thank you for listening in today and throughout the year. I want to wish the entire audience, all my guys in the studio here, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2025. You have a great holiday.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.